clubhouse.
Welcome to Interview with a Podcast, a Pod Clubhouse original. I'm Caroline from Daily Review.
And I'm Mike from Pop Culture Review. Each week on Interview with a Podcast, we sit down for a chat with a podcast or website and its creators.
Here at Pod Clubhouse, our main goal is to create a community of collaboration among podcasters and their friends.
If someone has something to say, has a passion for a topic, we want the Clubhouse to be a way for content creators to find their voice.
Through Interview with a Podcast, we'll be able to highlight a diverse array of podcasts from TV to music, movies to comedy.
Maybe it'll be a sports podcast one week, or a DIY home projects podcast. Hopefully we can help you discover the next must-listen-to true crime podcast.
Each episode gives you, the listener, a chance to meet and decide if their podcast is a fit for you.
That's right. We've got two goals here. With Interview with a Podcast, we hope to be a destination for listeners to get curated podcast recommendations. And for content creators, we hope to be an outlet to increase visibility and listenership. It's the rising tide lifts all boats approach to collaboration.
If there's a podcast you think we should feature on Interview with a Podcast, send us a DM and we'll see if we can set up an interview.
With that, I think it's time we get to this week's guest.
This is Paul.
And this is Mike. You're listening to Interview with a Podcast. Tonight, we're sitting down with Mike Marlowe from Fellowship of the Geeks podcast. Hey, Mike, thanks for coming on and talking with us today. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Thanks for having me.
How is life in quarantine and lockdown for you? Is your life greatly altered or pretty much the same?
It has its weirdnesses for sure. I am one of the very lucky ones who I have a job which I actually like, and I can do it from home for basically indefinitely. All is well. Now I have a kid at home that's doing the e-learning things, driving me nuts, but you know, it's all good. It's all good. I'm fine.
Canceled school for the rest of the year where you are at this point?
Oh, yes.
Okay, we just got that call in New York, and my son may not have done a little bit of fist bumping as soon as he heard
it. So. Yeah. My nephew's in New Jersey, and he doesn't get out of school until like the last week of June, so calling it was a big deal for them. But here in Texas, at least in Houston, man, we get out like in 2 weeks.
Yeah, they start a lot. I think it's for weather reasons. They start a lot earlier on the East Coast, especially up further north. And yeah, here we're done by Memorial Day. It's all good.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
When do your guys usually go back though? Because I know a lot of states in the South go back in like August.
It's mid-August here.
Yeah, northern state, we don't go back until after Labor Day weekend. So that's why I think it goes later. It relates to the harvest, actually, from when we were an agrarian society, if you're actually interested. Yes. I don't know why I know that. It's just one of those odd pub trivia things that I like to know. But yeah,
where he gets to use the word agrarian.
Agrarian, right. That's a great word.
First and foremost in his
mind. Pub trivia, especially, because people have been drinking need to try to say that word a lot. But
that's usually the tiebreaker, who can spell it, you know, after 2 hours of drinking and pub trivia. So. So tell us about Fellowship of the Geeks. Well, what is the podcast? Who makes it up? Give us the overview of what you guys do over there.
Oh, gosh. As soon as we figure it out, we will let you know. No, I'm kidding. So the Fellowship of the Geeks is four of us, four friends who get together on a weekly basis and talk about geeky stuff. We kind of center all of that on comics because, to be honest, the group kind of started out in a comic shop, kind of spun off and evolved from there. That was surprisingly like 10 years ago. It was actually two of my co-hosts, Thomas and Les, started out just hanging out at the local comic shop and just talking stuff. And people kept prodding them to do something with it. And they were like, okay. And so they set up a website and started what was a brand new technology 10 years ago. They started live streaming. So they would do that like once a week. And I kind of came along in the middle of that. And after a little while, took a break and then just decided to switch it over to a podcast. And honestly, that was 4 years ago now. Been going at it ever since.
So who makes up the crew? So is it still the same four that it's always been, or what's the current lineup of the geeks?
Well, Thomas and Les started it out. And like I said, they dragged me in kicking and screaming a year or two into it. And the newest addition is Liz, who started recording with us about 2 years ago, maybe a little more.
And she's a full-fledged geek, like a comic fan, the whole nine yards?
She really is. She may be slightly more geeky than the rest of us. Feel free to tell her I said that,
probably.
Too. But yeah. Oh, yeah. It's quite the thing to note, for sure. She may be more of a collector than any of the rest of us. And
I've got a modest collection of, to my wife's chagrin, about 1,000 books at home. I cataloged them before we moved, you see, because I wanted to make sure that I never bought another double by mistake in a, for the rest of my life. So I have an app that keeps track of them all for me.
I think that may qualify you as a geek, to be honest.
Yeah, well,
I
am closeted, but I come out of the closet a lot.
To get another book, apparently. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So how long have you been dabbling with comics and geek culture? What about it rings your bell? Like, would that make, keeps you coming back? Is it superheroes or science fiction or what?
Well, I had gotten into comics for the first time back probably, yeah, it would have been high school. It kind of fiddled around on the fringes of that because honestly, before that, I had been way into fantasy and science fiction. I was an early D&D player.
I am Dungeon Master, your guide in the realm of Dungeons and Dragons.
Okay.
Early for me, not necessarily early for D&D. I'm not that old. All right. But yeah, and so comics was kind of a natural progression. I kind of fell out of it for a while and then got back in several years ago now. And honestly, at this point, what kind of keeps me coming back is the breadth of stuff that you can find. I mean, there are comics is not just about superheroes, you know. There's a bunch of fantasy stuff that's really cool. There's a bunch of science fiction that's really cool.
I was about to ask you, after 10 years of, you know, you guys talking about comic books, you've been doing the podcast for, you know, going on 4 years now, do you ever feel like you're running out of things to talk about? And how do you decide what to talk about? Like, oh, no, we did that 2 years ago. Or is it just because comics, there's just so much out there, it's almost infinite in their topic selection?
The cool thing about that is, yeah, it actually can sometimes feel like we're running over the same stuff, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we're talking about it in the same way because we've experienced other stuff. If we wait 2 years and redo the same topic again, it's a different conversation now. That's actually one of the great things about it is that geek culture has hit a renaissance at this point.
It's a good time, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in whichever direction you go, whether you go comics, whether you go books in general, you go gaming, I mean, holy cow, there's just all kinds of stuff coming out. And a lot of it's really good. So we're kind of spoiled for stuff to talk about. It's great.
Do you synergize when like big tentpole events come out, like movies and stuff? I could imagine perhaps when like Civil War came out. There might have been some comparisons to the actual books to which the movie didn't actually resemble all that much. But do you kind of work with those things that grab a lot of people's attention all at once?
See, it's funny you mention that because the episode we just dropped this week was on Crisis on Infinite Earths. We were kind of specifically talking about the book itself, which was from 1985.
Right.
But the CW, they recently just did the CW thing. And so, I mean, we can go back and just talk about the comic. Honestly, I was part of another group of podcasters that did a thing on that whole CW crossover thing back 6 months ago. So we kind of decided, one, that ground has been covered at this point, and two, we could talk about it, but we didn't have to do it the same way that everybody else was. And so, yeah, I mean, it just kind of fell together in that way.
This is a total tangent, and don't feel you need to speak on behalf of the other geeks, but at least you personally, how do you feel generally about how TV and movies adapt comic books, especially when they take on a story like Crisis, like Civil War? What's your general feeling about how successful those usually are? Or is it a mixed bag?
I think you get a mixed bag because something like Crisis on Infinite Earths, that was a monumental story in a lot of different ways, not the least of which was just the scope. There's no way you could do that story in a 2.5-hour movie. I don't know that you could do that story in 10 2.5-hour movies. So that they actually found a way to take the time and spread it out over their properties and spend some significant time. And honestly, they had to whittle the story down. I couldn't even tell you at this point. But
Infinite is a lot of Earths.
Infinite is a lot, and they really only had like 5 shows they were working with. So Infinite was, it was a very limited scope because just out of necessity. So that's going to force your creators to be creative about it and pick and choose stories or parts of stories that are going to work in that thing. So you're going to get stuff that doesn't match the source material. And honestly, that's going to honk some people off. But it's all part of the process. And if you're smart and you're wanting to watch that sort of thing, you just kind of have to understand that it's not necessarily going to be the same thing. One, it's a different medium. And two, you can't do all that story in 5 hours, no matter what you do.
So do you guys generally trust when Greg Berlanti puts out a show? It's going to be different, but it's going to be same enough that it's probably worth watching.
To an extent, yeah. I mean, I'm not just going to pick on Berlanti. I mean, that's going to be true of any kind of adaptation of that sort of thing. It's going to be tangential to it. It's going to be close to it.
Yeah.
It's just never going to be exactly the same. And it's kind of the people out in the fandom that raise a stink about that sort of thing that are the ones that a lot of us are just like, I don't want to listen to this guy rant about this show for the 17th time. He doesn't like the show. That's fine. Other people can like the show, and people who are fans of that property can like the show, and it's okay. It's all part of the drama.
All part of fandom anyway.
Fandom has become kind of its own little soap opera in the last 10 years, but that's, talk about your tangents.
Oh yeah, I list Star Wars as my top item on my fan list.
They fly now!
And I just hate all the other Star Wars fans because of how things have gone in the past couple of years.
Mine was Star Trek. Honestly, I kind of suspected with the first of the J.J. Abrams movies. I was like, this is not my Star Trek. I mean, it's entertaining. And so I was like, okay, this is fine, whatever they can. I mean, it's not my, I don't own it, so they can do whatever they want. And that's, I kind of try to go into it with that attitude anyway. But yeah, I kind of stopped watching after the second movie because I just didn't like it.
Did you try Picard?
Engage.
I have not. I have been tempted to, but see, this is the other fun part. I'm actually not kind of the TV guy. I mean, I can sit here and talk theory for a while, but my ignorance will start to show at some point because we'll get into details. But I kind of stopped watching TV several years back. I think it was kind of before things got really interesting in terms of TV, so I really probably should give it another shot. But
there are some good things.
Right. I mean, there's so much love out there for Picard and honestly, quite a few of the other shows out there in the geek realm. I kind of ran out of patience with like broadcast TV, and I just kind of haven't taken the leap back in.
It's easy to feel burned, especially if it's an IP that you really like. See, I like the J.J. Abrams movies, but I was never as precious about the original series Star Trek. It's actually one of my least favorite of the Star Trek shows. So I wasn't so up in arms when he went and changed so much that affected that part of the timeline and the canon. But like Picard, Next Generation remains my favorite of the Star Trek properties. And Picard is, you know, there's cursing. You know, Captain Picard uses bad language.
R-rated and, cursing.
Like R-rated cursing.
And if you feel that my rank makes me too conspicuous, well then, I am content to be demoted to captain.
Sheer fucking hubris.
And oh, wow. it's like an edgy CBS, you know, in the same vein that like Discovery is, you know, where they said fuck for the first time in a Star Trek property. And then it was like fuck in the episode. And, you know, it was like a kid finding porn for the first time. Like you just couldn't get enough of it. And so Picard really kind of took up that mantle. And that was a little jarring for me because I was watching it with my son. I've raised him to appreciate these things, and he hasn't done the deep dive, but I was like, this is a new show we can watch together. You know, and you have Captain Picard being like, oh, fuck you up the ass with a dildo, you know? And I'm like, God, that's not what I want, you know? That's not cool. But that being said, I liked it. I mean, it was good TV. It was a little jarring, though, if you are a loyalist to the Roddenberry vision of what Star Trek and the Star Trek universe should be.
Right. Villain of the week, et cetera, something like that.
Roddenberry was convinced that there should be no conflict among the crew. There should be a good morality tale. It should present the best vision of humanity and the future as possible. No money, no poverty. And then, you know, you have DS9 is all about its latinum. And, you know, Picard and Discovery are fuck everywhere, you know. So, like, you know, he died and then they really kind of took his vision and did something else with it.
To an extent, sometimes things need to evolve. And this is why I've made a point of not getting up in arms about the whole Star Trek thing. You know, I had the show that I loved and that's great. And honestly, I love Next Generation just as much. And I'm good with that. And I enjoyed those shows. And if I want to go back and watch those shows, that's great. And if somebody wants to drop the cash to some extent, reinvent that into something a little with some more modern sensibilities, who am I to say no? Obviously, I could be certain randos on the internet who say no to everything, but nobody likes that guy, so why would I do that?
If there aren't beehives and mini skirts, I don't want it, god damn it.
Mini skirts never hurt anybody, Mike.
There's nothing wrong. I'm not complaining about the mini skirts. It's all good.
But actually, this is a good tangent, though, because not everything you guys do on the podcast is comic books. It's a lot of it. But every now and then, you guys will do a movie. We'll do some sci-fi or horror or something campy or a TV show. So how do you guys, you know, you walk in Monday, you guys get on your Slack chat or whatever it is. How do you guys decide what the topic is that week? Like, usually, what's the brainstorming idea for that week's show, and how do you come up with it?
It's a lot more simple than you think, because what happens is one of my co-hosts, Thomas, maintains a list. And, I mean, a lot of times he's just dumping ideas into the list. I mean, several of us are pretty active on Twitter. And so he's like watching some of the people he follows on Twitter and seeing what they're talking about and just kind of general news. And he's constantly throwing stuff on the list. And sometimes in our conversations, when we're all getting ready to record, we'll sit there for half an hour, 45 minutes and just BS and have a good old time getting warmed up, basically. And he gets ideas out of that. And so he's kind of the keeper of the schedule. If at any point any of us object to anything or have suggestions for anything, he's very open to fiddling with the schedule. We fiddle with it all the time. But there is definitely a controller of the schedule, which is probably a good thing with us, because we'd probably never get anywhere if it was going to be democratic.
So has that scheduling produced any like memorable moments? Like you can think back and be like, you know, if anyone should listen to any single show of ours, it should be this one.
This is a fun question, because the episodes that probably work best are when we get to talk to other people, when we get to do interviews. The one that stands out to me is we've got one comic creator, an indie comic creator, who for 3 years running now, she calls us up and says, okay, when can you squeeze me in? I've got another Kickstarter getting ready to drop. And the conversations with her are always a blast, because she's absolutely great at being interviewed. And the comic she's created is really interesting and appeals to kind of all of us, all of the four of us in different ways. And so the conversations are just awesome. And the fact that she keeps coming back for more every year is it's like one of the highlights of the year for me.
Do you get the sense that the people that follow your podcast know who she is and follow her work?
I mean, I hope so.
What does she write?
The book that she writes is called Boston Metaphysical Society. Her name is Madeline Holly Rosing. I'll go ahead and drop a plug for her here. What the hell? It is a comic. It started kind of as a comic. It has evolved a bit. She's written a novel about it as well. The Boston Metaphysical Society is a kind of an alt history steampunk type thing set in Boston, like in 1895-ish. And it actually centers around a detective who specifically works on supernatural cases. There's a lot there just right all by itself just to unpack. And so it's a really interesting story. And she's doing a really fun job of working on unpacking all of the history stuff, all of the stuff that's different in that timeline than what we've got. It kind of appeals to the history nerds in us, obviously appeals to the comics nerds, and it helps that she tells a really good story. So it kind of appeals to the writer nerds. It certainly appeals to us.
Does she weave like historical figures into her work?
Oh, absolutely.
Because we were having a conversation about that on another podcast. Not me per se, but I've listened to that conversation, Mike. This is just like a tangential question. Is it important in those cases to maintain any sort of, I don't know, semblance to that person's existing
fidelity?
Yeah, there you go. Reputation as it stands today, or can you embellish wildly and possibly, you know, tarnish that reputation? Is that okay?
I think that's kind of the juggling act that you have to go through when you're doing something like that. It's entirely possible to tarnish what history tells us about certain historical figures. I think the trick with that is, one, you kind of have to do your research a little bit, at least, and get a sense for what kind, I mean, as much as you can, because sometimes there's just not enough information out there, which I guess would make it easier. You could make stuff up. But if you're dealing with historical figures, you've got to kind of get to know them at least enough to get a sense of how they're going to come across and how you want to make them come across. I'll throw an example with the Boston Metaphysical Society. One of the characters is Nikola Tesla.
All right.
I mean, if you know anything about Tesla from history, this is one of the guys that the phrase tortured genius was kind of invented for. So he's really, really bright person without a lot of people skills and some ideas that as he aged got a little strange, maybe. What Madeline ended up doing with him was making him honestly a much kind of a stronger personality than you kind of would get from the historical Tesla, and making him just kind of a not a very nice guy, which simplifies some things in a way. But she kind of did this in a mishmash with a few other historical figures like Edison and Houdini as part of the deal, Alexander Graham Bell. She kind of brought all of those guys together, and they're working together in a way, kind of off and on.
Like a League of Extraordinary Inventors?
Sort of, yeah, and kind of in that vein. And so what she has done is taken the historical figures and melded them together into a unit and a team that kind of works in a specific way to get to a certain goal in the story.
Okay.
I don't have any idea if that answered what the question was.
See, I like that kind of stuff, though. There's an author named Eric Larson, Eric with a K, and he's written a couple of books, Dead Wake. Another one, the one that was most popular was Devil in the White City. And he does the same thing, except for it's more of a murder mystery thriller-esque, but set against the backdrop of real events that involves real people. So, you know, it'll be like a Jack the Ripper kind of story set at the 1896 like World's Fair in Chicago.
You're gonna get into H.H. Holmes territory there if you're not careful.
You're 100% right. He plays into the story. And then, you know, Dead Wake is like a murder mystery aboard the Titanic and set with like real people who were on that. So that's kind of his bailiwick. So I like that a lot. I like when you drop in real people and use them like background and aesthetic characters and stuff. I feel like Nikola Tesla is probably a poster child for steampunk culture, you know, in a lot of ways.
Absolutely. And if you want another variation on the Tesla personality character, however you want to refer to it, a comic series called Atomic Robo is a really fun, because the main character, whose name is Atomic Robo, not surprisingly, is a robot with a personality who was built by Tesla, obviously back around the turn of the 20th century. And now he's like this science superhero type guy who fights monsters and weird stuff, and it's awesome. It's an absolutely awesome series, and they're still going. They've been going on for, I don't know, 10-12 years, and they're still making new stories, and it's a really cool thing. But yeah, I mean, obviously Tesla has at least in the past played a part in that story.
If you're into Red Dead or into video games, Red Dead Redemption 2 has a side story character named Marko Dragic, who is in that same vein. He's like a mad inventor, and he is trying to, you know, create life Frankenstein style. And he ends up making like he brings like a robot to life in the same way. The robot ends up killing him, spoilers, in a horribly bloody death. You know,
not
so he's successful.
Really.
It's successful, and the robot is still on the loose somewhere in the hinterland of Red Dead Redemption 2. But
can we put successful in like air quotes for that? I mean, come on. If it killed him.
That sounds like downloadable content waiting to happen.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, for sure.
That's cool.
Well, so here's the thing. So, you know, Paul gave his bona fides. He came out of the closet, showed you a little leg about, you know, his collection and clearly is in the comics. I am much more tangential to comic books. I came to comic books because of the boon of like the Berlanti shows and the rise of the superhero culture. So I was kind of a reverse order. But for me, I was much more into graphic novels. So I'm like the nasty, dirty cousin over here. That was like what was my thing. So for me, am I like a demographic that can listen to Fellowship of the Geeks, or is it above my head? Do I need to know every character in the, you know, golden and silver age of comics in order to get down with you guys? Or is it kind of more accessible to even light comic book fans?
Well, I would like to think that, and maybe this is ego talking, I would like to think that maybe you could even learn a bit from hearing us talk about some of the stuff we talk about. We do it, we try to do it, or it turns out that we do it, in a way that we end up kind of explaining things to each other a lot. And so whatever background history you don't necessarily have along the way and something we're talking about, we're likely to talk about how it got started somehow along the line. So I would hope it would still be useful to you. I mean, and hopefully entertaining as well. But we go into some deep dives, and we also keep talking about tangents here. We're big on tangents on our show. Big, absolutely.
No harm in that. It's a podcast.
Absolutely. I mean, how else are we going to fill all that time, right?
Do you guys all have like specialties, as it were? Is there like a DC guy? A Marvel guy?
Avengers! Assemble. No!
A non-mainline comic book guy? Or do you all have a kind of a similar base?
We kind of pass those things around among each other. Like, people like Thomas and Les are more entrenched in comics history, so they know a little more about the Marvel and DC stuff than the rest of us. But we've all been reading comics religiously for at least the past 7-8 years. So we have a lot of crossover, but we also kind of have our little preferences. And so we can recommend stuff to each other, and we can talk about things and explain things to each other that we're not always entirely up on. So I think it's a pretty good mix.
If you had to define your own area of expertise, would it be Marvel or DC or independent?
Oh, I'm definitely more of an independent guy.
You partial to like Image, IDW, Dark Horse, or even smaller than that?
I mean, I'll go where the good stories are. There's been, especially over, like I said, over the last 5-6 years, there's been just a ton of awesome creator-owned stuff coming out of Image. There has been high quality stuff coming out of IDW and Dark Horse and Dynamite and Boom. And I mean, just I could go down a list of a bunch of publishers that are putting out good stuff.
It's crazy. I mean, you find publishers you never heard of, and then they go and snag a license like Oni Comics. I never heard of them, but they have Rick and Morty. So all of a sudden I know who Oni Comics is.
Well, yeah. And Oni has been around for a little while, but yeah, they never did anything really huge. They had some minor hits. Mm-hmm. As it were, and then they land the Rick and Morty thing.
It's funny you mentioned Image, and I don't know that I think of Image anymore, and Dark Horse, and I don't know if I even think of them as independent anymore, or as not mainstream. I feel like they've gotten so large, especially in the last 5-10 years, especially on like the back of like The Walking Dead and stuff. Do you really consider them independent, or is like a small, feisty startup kind of thing at this point?
My logic on that is that since they primarily deal in creator-owned, I almost think of them as kind of a conglomeration. I mean, almost a commune to an extent of people who that's kind of where they can go to get something printed on a large scale. I mean, obviously, they have more of an editorial process than that, and I'm oversimplifying. But I tend to think of stuff that comes out of Image as individually that book or that group of creators is kind of a small independent group of creators, and they happen to have landed or gotten lucky or whatever, or gotten in with the right people and managed to get the thing that is Image Comics to print their stuff for them. And yes and no, I guess, is the short answer on that.
IDW is an interesting one, though, because they managed to pull off this, I don't know how, but they get licenses from other comics. So they get like
they're running some Marvel stuff right now.
Yeah, and they did like a Turtles and Batman crossover. That's like bridging two different comic book companies into one crossover on a totally third platform.
And they still have the Dungeons and Dragons license too for comics.
Huh. Yeah,
boy, that shut the conversation down, didn't it? Jeez.
Yeah,
just kidding.
I was actually just looking at, I get emails from Image Comics PR people basically every day, and they actually just announced a new book based on, it's like a spin out of the Walking Dead universe, The Walking Dead, The Alien by Brian K. Vaughan and Marcus Martin. So I just got that email like, I don't know, 2 hours ago.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one yet. I've checked my email that has that stuff in it today, but yeah that's cool.
Pretty cool. The artwork on the cover looks pretty good.
The idea that they're starting to branch that out and Kirkman is letting go and letting other writers take over some of it. That's interesting.
Well, I mean, he's busy swimming in his Scrooge McDuck size vault of money.
Oh, yeah. He's definitely got the treasure bath thing going on.
For sure. Except for it's in the shape of like a Walker skull or something like that. But oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That baseball bat that Negan carries, it looks just like that.
That's what I was thinking.
He's got those in gold mounted all over his house. Every door handle.
He's got 9 pairs of spats. They're all covered in blood splatter. It's pretty awesome.
If you could just dream cast your perfect guest, who would you invite on the show? And they'd have to say yes, they're coming on your show. Be selfish about it. You don't have to care about the other guys.
See, but the deal here is that my answer for that is kind of a cheat answer. And the funny thing is you ask the 4 hosts of the show that question, you'll get almost certainly get 4 different answers.
Sure.
I'm the reason we don't do like top 5 type episodes on our show, because when I come up with a top 5 list for anything, there's 20 things on it because I can't narrow it down.
Each item has a sub item.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah, there's like 7 number ones, 8 number twos. Yeah, it's disgusting. But kind of my cheat answer for this question is I have this kind of love-hate relationship with interviews. I get so wound up about it. I mean, I don't know how you guys do this. Honestly, it would make me absolutely crazy to just talk to random people all the time.
We just picture the guests naked. It helps.
I day drink a lot these days. So, I mean, I've been rolling since like 11 a.m. It's Cinco de Mayo. So,
you are not alone in that, I am sure. But yeah, I mean, I absolutely hate the build-up to an interview. But my opinion, we've never had a bad one on our show. Now, we can't do them very often because, it makes me crazy. But my deal is a lot of my favorite episodes that we have are interviews with these indie comics creators, these people who are just out there trying to get their stuff out there and get it read and kind of get into the industry. Those folks are just, it seems cliche to call them hungry, but man, they're out there busting it on the podcast circuit. So, I mean, they're talking to us, but they're talking to 4 other podcasts that week because that's when their book's coming out. But those are some of the best conversations to have because they all have different backgrounds and different approaches and different levels of experience with writing or art. And it makes for some really awesome conversations, to be honest. And so I don't know that I have a specific dream guest. I mean, maybe we've been lucky, but every guest we've had has been kind of awesome in their own way. And so, I really kind of just want for that luck streak to keep going so that, I mean, selfishly, I want all of our interviews to be awesome. But it's one of those deals where there's no way to know beforehand. So it's a little bit of a crapshoot. But they turn out to be really fun conversations and really fun recording sessions.
It almost makes the trepidation and kind of nervousness and the dread beforehand worth it.
It does. I even feel kind of stupid afterwards because, like, why was I dreading this so much? That's just dumb. But obviously, there's some weird therapy-driven thing going on in my head that I don't know.
Yeah, if you didn't feel that way, there would probably be something wrong with you. You may be on, like, the sociopath scale if you had no nerves before those kinds of things. So I think you're on the right track. And you know you're at the
well, thanks. I appreciate the.
you're not pinging on the sociopath scale, so you know
you're not an extroverted not today, comic book anyway, fan. Right. What?
I know, right?
So over the course of 4 years, you know, a podcast will change. It'll evolve just kind of naturally, even if you don't plan on it. If someone was coming to listen to the Fellowship of the Geeks for the first time, what is a good entry episode for them to listen to that you think represents well what you guys do? And if you don't have a specific episode, I don't want to put you on the spot, maybe a topic that you think is what you guys do best. You know, don't listen to the sci-fi horror movie camp episode, because that's not who we are. Listen to this one about a deep dive into the flesh. Versus Superman. And Speed, you know, or whatever it is.
Oh, we have done entire runs on comedy horror. So, but anyway, that's not your point. Honestly, the first thing I would say would be, please don't go back to the very beginning, because, oh man, if you think we're rough now, you should listen to us from 4 years ago. That was scary.
Would it surprise you to hear that every single person answers that question the exact same way?
No, not in
whatever you do, don't go listen to the first couple. They're horrible.
Man. Now, we made a point. We recorded like 4 episodes before we released and trashed them. I kid you not. We trashed them. And then we started recording for real. And even then, it was still awful. But honestly, I think a good place to start would be back in, I think it was it February? I think it was February. We did a little mini series, because we're weird and we do that. Just for February, we decided to do comedies. So we picked a comedy movie. We covered Airplane. We did an episode on Airplane.
I want you to stand.
Thank you.
Crayon?
No, thank you. I take it black. Like my man.
We've actually talked about Police Squad before as well.
Police Squad, in color.
We did Blazing Saddles.
The Camp Town ladies sing this song. Doo-dah, doo-dah. The Camp Town racetrack 5 miles long. All the doo-dah day.
Run, run all night. Go on, run all day. 35 money on a bobtail bag. Somebody bet on the day.
And we just sat around for an hour, hour and a half just talking about how hilarious these movies are. And we had a blast doing them. I think that's probably the key, is as much as I hate to say it, find the episodes where we're having fun, which I wish I could say was every episode. But I mean, sometimes we pick topics that are tough.
You know, sometimes it's work. It feels like I feel you on Airplane.
They say, see abroad to get that booty act. Leg her down or smack them, yak them. Cold got to be. You know, shit.
Since the day I saw it, it has always been my favorite comedy of all time, and probably my second favorite movie of all time. Always,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
It always works for me. It still makes me laugh today. I just watched it like 6 months ago, and I was like snorting water out of my nose. So.
Right. See, and but one of our number actually didn't like it that much, and so it made for some fun and interesting conversation, because we kind of were trying to talk that person
into. That sounds like someone who should be an ex-geek. That's some bullshit right there.
They're the Boromir of the Fellowship.
Gondor needs no king. I mean, it's again, I mean, everybody has different history and different experiences, and so everybody has different preferences. But he was hooting and hollering when we were talking about Blazing Saddles. So I mean, how wrong a person can this be? If I mean, okay, you just kind of have to allow him his little foible, and it's fine.
He hates humor, you know, I guess.
Well,
I wonder what it feels like to be dead inside. I don't know.
I'll ask him next time.
You
I
should
talk
ask him that question.
This is also the guy who loves to watch just utterly crappy movies. So, and he finds mirth in that. So, you know, I'll give it to him. He can have the one.
You know, I can admit I was stuck on watching bad horror movies for a couple of years. You know, just like the worse the better. And I got to the end of that tunnel and came back out, and I haven't really watched anything like that since. I got it out of my system.
It takes a certain type to find something to appreciate in something that bad.
So what do you guys have planned next for your podcast? Any guests that you want to tell us about, or a couple of series of shows that you're thinking of doing?
Well, I have a couple ideas what's coming down the line. We keep a schedule for a few months out posted anyway.
Oh. That's a good idea.
Okay, so I'm not quite sure when this is going to drop, but the episode we recorded the other night, which will come out as of when we're recording this next Sunday. Every year we have, in the early spring, we do kind of a summer movie preview episode where we go find a list of movies that are coming out in the summer. And
that'll be weird this year.
We kind of throw some ideas that sounds interesting, that sort of thing. Since we're not really going to have summer movie season this year, we decided, okay, well, let's pick a summer movie season from the past and we'll talk about that instead. So we picked 1985 because we're all old enough to remember that for the most part. And so we went through a list of movies that came out in 1985 and basically did the same thing.
Was Top Gun 85 or 86?
Top Gun was not 85.
I'm pretty sure it's 86.
I think it must have been 86.
Yeah, 85 is really dominated by like Back to the Future, right? That's the glowing one that always comes to mind.
Yep. I mean, there were a few others that sort of snuck in under Goonies? Back to the Future.
Goonies was in there, right?
Goonies was 85, yes.
See, I know my shit.
Absolutely. Never doubted it for a second. But yeah, so that's like next week. Looking further into the horizon, we generally do kind of a theme for October. Usually it's horror related because we also hang out with a bunch of other podcasters that are associated with on Twitter, the hashtag All the Horror. We'll end up doing a bunch of crossover type stuff with other podcasts at that time. We've already got plans for that in October. So, and that's the one that we almost always look forward to. Because we're weird and we actually kind of like talking about horror movies, even if we don't necessarily watch a lot of contemporary ones. We ended up talking about old horror movies, which is, you know, that's we're old, that's what we do. But yeah, so that'll be something fun to look forward to.
All right.
That's awesome, man. We love the collaboration here at Pod Clubhouse. That's like our whole thing, is working with different podcasts and, you know, mixing and matching and kind of creating something new. So that sounds great. Where could people find you? Where can they find Fellowship of the Geek on the internet, on social media? What's the best place to reach out and interact with you guys?
The simplest and easiest way to find what we've got going on would be probably our website, which is thefellowshipofthegeeks.net. That links out to everything you could possibly imagine. Otherwise, obviously, we're a podcast, so we're available pretty much anywhere you can get podcasts. Whatever podcatcher you use, just type in the Fellowship of the Geeks and I'm pretty sure we'll be somewhere in the search list. That depends. I don't know how good our SEO is. We'll find out someday. but we're on Twitter. We're on Facebook. Not only do we have the show's Twitter handle, which is at Fellowship Geeks. Most of us are also on Twitter. So we're around there somewhere. And Facebook, we're the Fellowship of the Geeks.
How about your personal Twitter? Are you like someone that people should go follow?
My Twitter is at Mikey Geek. And yeah, I mean, I've got a few followers and I'm pretty active on there. I'm pretty interactive. If you poke at me, I will poke back.
We're big into poking. So that's awesome. We totally feel that. Well, Mike, thanks so much for coming and talking to us here at the Clubhouse. And everyone should definitely go give a listen to the Fellowship of the Geeks podcast. It's got something for everyone. If you wear your geek flag or you keep it hidden in a closet, these guys are for you. So definitely go check them out. Thanks so much for coming by and talking to us tonight. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Mike.
Great. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
This has been Paul with Pod Clubhouse.
And this has been Mike with Pod Clubhouse. And this has been Interview with a Podcast, talking to the Fellowship of the Geeks. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening. This has been an original Pod Clubhouse production. Pod Clubhouse is a podcast network dedicated to encouraging collaboration among podcasters and friends to bring a fresh voice and diverse perspective on a wide array of content. Please visit and leave a comment for us at podclubhouse.com. Rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast feeds on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find us at Pod Clubhouse. Our DMs are always open, and we'd love to hear from you.
Pod Clubhouse.